الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه.
It's a water relief podcast.
My name is Carl, and here with me,
or are Mortimon. One of those two is correct.
I have messed this up yet again.
Yeah, I didn't know where you were going with all of that as well.
What are we doing?
Let's do it badly, and then we can do it better.
Oh, excellent. That's the way I like to do it.
Dun, dun, dun. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert.
Can we try that again? One, two, three, together for a better world.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to the Water Relief Podcast. My name is Carl, and with me is my amazing, talented, and always beautiful. You know, this is the kind of person that no matter what happens, when he gets up in the morning, he just wakes up beautiful with a positive outlook on life. And I am so lucky to have him as my co-host. It is the...
It is obvious now that Carl never sees me in the morning. Never, never, never. This is Mordant. And when I wake up in the morning, I have hair akimbo. What are we doing today? We are traveling today. We are all over the place lately, so...
Well, Mordant, we are at the Hyatt Regency in Washington, D.C., for the Impact Empowering Voices Gala Awards Ceremony. Today, Impact will be honoring those in the Muslim community that are the most helpful and have been the most encouraging to the Muslim community over the last year.
So Impact, isn't that the Muslim Public Affairs Council?
That is exactly what MPACT stands for, and I have to be careful.
Making Muslims a part of the solution since 1988?
I believe that is their tagline, just as our tagline
It absolutely is, as I'm reading it right off of their website right now.
Imagine that. Wow. No.
So this is the first I've heard about something like this, how they're honoring people who have stood up for just basically stand in the gap for Muslims or whoever it is that need that kind of help. And why is George Takei on their cover photo on their Facebook page? So what is he's obviously done something.
Well, I would assume because George Takei has probably done something or said something that has been very helpful in the Muslim community.
And that makes me very happy because I'm a nerd at heart, so I'm very happy that he is that guy.
Aren't we all nerds at heart, really? When it comes down to it, aren't we really all just nerds at heart?
All the good ones are.
Exactly.
But are we going to be interviewing some people?
We are. There is a very impressive guest list tonight of congressmen and congresspeople and board members and cabinet members that'll be rolling through here. And hopefully we're going to have an opportunity to talk to them. We're going to have an opportunity to interview them and thank them personally for the work that they've done for the Muslim community over the last year. And we're also going to be talking to some MPACT staff members to get a feel for what they do and how MPACT helps the community.
That's awesome. Yeah, I hear that they're honoring Secretary of Labor Tom Fez, as well as Secretary of Education John King Jr., and the Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes. So just to name a few of some of the people.
And for those of you that are not familiar with the show, and this is the first time you've downloaded and listened, as you can actually see, Mordant does way more homework than I do. So good on you, man.
Thanks. I just have a lot more tabs open in my browser.
I'm on Wi-Fi. I don't want to suck it all up. That's all.
All right. Well, let's get on to the interview.
Let's. We are standing here with...
Reham Osman.
Reha.
Reham. Reham.
Reham.
Reham.
Reham. And she is the communications
coordinator
for MPACT. So I dragged her over. I said, you're a communications coordinator. Come coordinate some communication.
What happens in your day-to-day job while you're out there communicating with people?
So a lot of the work I do is actually engaging with our online audience. So a lot of digital media work and talking to the online world is mainly what I'm doing, whether that's through social media or through our email listserv.
And is that just getting the word about MPACT out there, or are they already engaged and know what you're about, or... How does that work?
Yeah, it's actually less about getting the word out about MPACT. It's more about telling people about American Muslim perspectives. It's delivering the news that mainstream media is not delivering to people. So it's almost as if it's like a media platform of its own. That's how I would see the way we communicate online.
Who are you communicating with specifically? Is it mostly Muslims or non-Muslims, or who are you actually hitting up?
So it depends. If the issue is very specific to the Muslim community, obviously that's who we're trying to target. But in times of crisis, whether it's after an attack or something like that, where the perceptions of Muslims is an issue, we're really trying to reach the we're trying to reach Americans of other faiths, really. That's what we're trying to do by sharing positive stories about Muslims and how they're responding to different crises.
That's wonderful. Where do you share these at so that our listeners can find them as well?
Yeah, it's through our Facebook page, our Twitter. We have a Snapchat account and Instagram at MPAC_national.
And how does Snapchat work for you?
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of behind the scenes, I think. We take a lot of risks, I think, as an organization. We're not afraid to like show people what really happens behind the scenes. We have a lot of cool personalities, I think, on staff. So we're not afraid to just kind of play around with it. We want to experiment more, I think, and really show what happens in the MPAC office, whether it's in DC or LA.
Morden just got his Snapchat account, and he's still learning to use it as well.
Yeah.
I'm hesitant. It just seems like a lot of time.
Yeah, it takes no time. It's really addictive, but it's fun.
Do you find that the message out there is actually galvanizing the Muslim community and getting them to act?
You know what? I think it is. I think right now we're in a time where people want to do something. We get a ton of questions in our inbox, people just asking, how can I get involved? Because they are feeling inspired and they're at times feeling hopeless, I think, by what's happening. So they're looking for something to do with all this, a lot of the negative news in the world. And we find that when we share positive news, we actually get a lot more people reaching out to us asking, how can they get involved? Because then they feel hopeful and that there's actually real actions they can take.
Right. Well, our listeners, we have both Muslims and non-Muslims. How can they get involved with MPAC and otherwise?
So we are a policy organization. We're not a community-based organization like a lot of others. So we don't always constantly have events where people can get involved. But a lot of it is just pushing that message out there. We're one of those organizations who truly believe in the power of social media. We invest a lot in it. A lot of our breaking news actually goes out through social media because we can reach people more. So if people were to share those messages, I'm using the framing that we are kind of throwing out there for people to use, that would be helpful, because what people don't realize is that the way we frame things actually makes an impact in the way people perceive the Muslim community. So I think if people helped out with that and sharing that information, that would really be helpful.
Excellent. Have you been in contact with some of the people being honored tonight?
Yeah, so a couple of them. This morning we were at a press conference with Congressman Don Beyer. We're always in touch with Congressman Andre Carson. So I think everyone that we're honoring tonight is somebody who we have personally worked with or who has been to an MPAC event before and spoken. So these are people who are real change makers and they have a real connection to the organization.
Do you have a personal story of something that you've seen happen or something that's affected you, touched your heart?
I think you stumped her. She's struggling to remember here.
Yeah. Do you mean like a personal story with one of the honorees or?
Yes.
I mean, I would say Andre Carson. I think he is one of the realest people out there. He's a friend of MPAC. He always remembers your name. I remember when I was an MPAC young leader and I went to the summit. That was the first time I met him and I was very nervous. And then now it's interesting, like 2.5 years later, he is somebody I actually feel like I could just go up to and talk to him. He doesn't make me feel like he's just, you know, a congressman. I feel like he's really, you know, a public servant and he's trying to actually help move the community forward as well as his constituents.
That's fantastic. That's exactly what I was looking for.
Great. I'm glad.
So, Morden, she might actually be the one we could ask the question that you asked me earlier that I was taking a stab in the dark at. Why is George Takei on, was it the Facebook page or the website?
Yeah, he's the cover photo for your Facebook page.
Yeah. So the question is, why is he our cover photo?
Yeah.
So we obviously do want to promote our media award since we just held that. And he was one of our honorees. And I think he stands out. Obviously, all the honorees are fantastic on their own. But when I look at George Takei, I just remember how much he has advocated for the Muslim community. I think the Muslim community hasn't realized that side of him. He's an activist, obviously, for other communities, LGBT community. But he has advocated for the Muslim community. And by highlighting him, I want people to recognize that. And I think it's important for Muslims to thank those who do stick their neck out for us and who speak out on our behalf, because when somebody like George Takei, who has over a million, maybe up to 10 million followers on Facebook, just posts something, you know, defending the Muslim community, that makes an impact. So I really wanted people to recognize him for that and thank him for it.
Her answer, I like him a little bit more right now.
That's the whole point.
Her answer was way better than mine.
I'd love to hear your answer.
I just said he probably did something very cool for the Muslim community.
No, he's done a lot more than that, actually. You're actually going to catch him in our video that we're going to share tonight. So, yeah, you'll hear a lot more from him.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Standing in front of me is Saif from Impact, and he is a policy analyst here in the DC office, and he's going to tell us what we're doing tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. So MPAC is hosting our Empowering Voices Gala to celebrate Empowering Voices, meaning those who have helped our work and the work of the American Muslim community. So people who have stood up for American Muslims, people who have supported us and our allies, because it's people like them that make our work and the work of American Muslims easier.
And tonight is the third annual gala that we're actually doing here. What are some of the people that are being honored tonight?
Yeah, so we have two cabinet level secretaries. We have Secretary King of Education. We have Secretary Perez of Department of Labor. We have Ben Rhodes from the White House, Deputy National Security Advisor for President Obama, and we have four members of the Congress: Congressman Beyer, Congressman Becerra, Congresswoman Chu, and Congressman Andre Carson. So big lineup.
So you're an analyst.
Correct. I'm a policy analyst. I work mainly with congressional relations.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I wasn't sure if you were analyzing to see who it is that we would be honoring tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I work for MPAC. I'm the one that goes and talks to members of Congress and their staff on issues that are pertinent to the American Muslim community. So today is a celebration of those allies that have responded to our community.
What would one of those issues be that you would go and talk to them about?
Well, what's going on in the news with, every time a terrorist attack happens, unfortunately, American Muslims are under the magnifying glass and the government reacts. And so we want to make sure that the legislation being passed, for example, things that concern national security mainly, do not unfairly target American Muslims. So we've been successful in making sure a couple of pieces of legislation in the past couple of months don't do that, and we're hoping to continue that work.
Is there anything specifically that sticks out in your mind that somebody has done that to stand up, to stand in the gap for Muslims that you're especially, that you love?
Yeah, I mean, one of the most concrete pieces is one of the most concrete examples is Congressman Don Beyer, who we're awarding tonight, came out with a resolution and also a bill today, actually. Where he is, the bill is basically prohibits any religious test for any immigrants that come in direct response to, obviously, all the rhetoric we're hearing from the presidential campaign. So those are hard, concrete things that people are doing. He also had a resolution that commends the contributions of American Muslims and basically makes sure that he basically asks that anti-Muslim bigotry is put to an end and things like that. So those are really awesome examples.
How difficult do you think this task will be if the election goes a certain way, away from what we have right now? I mean, is this going to make your job a lot harder? I'm sure it's going to. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, well, if Donald Trump or somebody of that ilk were to win the White House, it will definitely be tough. We do suspect that he would moderate some, but we're not going to count on it. It would just require what we're doing now, except, just hitting the pavement even harder, like going to, using our allies even more on the Democratic side and building those relationships on the Republican side, too, because the American Muslim community is not a monolith. Yes, a lot of them did vote Democrat in overwhelmingly over the past two or three elections. But we are varied, and we need to take those strengths and use them with whichever president comes into power.
Is there anything that you can suggest to our listeners that they could do to help?
Help
these empowering voices, or anything that they can do to find out more about this?
Absolutely. A lot of the things that we say is that a lot of people talk about Muslims, they don't talk to Muslims. So what we encourage is that people go and talk to people, whether it be running for your local school board, writing an op-ed, or if a congressman or a, you know, the president does something good, tell him that. Because a lot of the times we'll fear, you know, President Obama, for example, will do something and it'll be so awesome for the American Muslim community, and his staffers will tell us, like, hey, listen, we didn't get one thank you. So are we even, like, what are we doing this for? So definitely get out there and just get involved. Have your voice heard. Let your criticisms and your praise be heard by your elected officials. And, hey, become an elected official yourself.
I think I see President right. Morton in our future.
I don't know about that. Yeah, it's a lot more important to get become involved than to just duck and cover and keep your head low. That may be some of what the issue is. You know, at least at the very least, writing to a congressman or becoming a congressman, whichever end of the gamut you're going to run there, definitely not just keeping your head low.
Absolutely, and you know, that was the prevailing mindset. You know, when our the wave of Muslim immigrants came to the U.S., it was like, hey, we're just here to make have economic opportunity. We're not here to rock the boat, and but that's slowly changing with the younger generations.
Right. Well, especially Americans. Americans, and once you become an American citizen, you are, it's part of your job to rock the boat.
Absolutely.
Boat rockers. Absolutely. All the way back from 1776. Yeah.
Absolutely. So let's rock that boat hard.
There you go. Okay, Saif, I know you're trying to get set up for tonight, and I know you got a lot more to do. So thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Appreciate it, guys.
And we will see you tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you. I was just telling Warden that you may, if I remember my guest lists correctly, we may end up running into each other again, because you've spoken with IRUSA in the past, haven't you?
Many, many times.
Yes. So there you go. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. It's good to be with you.
So we are at the Impact Voices of Empowerment Gala tonight.
What brings you here?
Thank you, Morden.
I am here particularly because our congressman from the 8th Congressional District in Virginia, Don Beyer, is being honored. Don Beyer has really shown some tremendous leadership. And I think part of the issue around his leadership, around the protection, the defense, in a very proactive way for American Muslims is incredible. And let me, quite often what you'll find living in the sort of Beltway bubble in Washington, D.C., is that politicians find a parade and then they run in front of it. What we have in the case of Don Beyer is a tremendous, tremendous leadership. After the terrible attack in San Bernardino, rather than waiting for an event to happen and then for him to come forward and say, oh, I'm in support of Muslims, I'm against bigotry and racism, he called us at the mosque and said, I would like to have a press event at the mosque. I would like to bring other members of Congress to join me in denouncing acts of racism, violence, intolerance to the American Muslim community. And when he did that, what it meant is that the media followed him to the masjid to get the story of this resilient community in the face of hostility, all coming together, black, white, Hispanics. Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton joined us. Alfonso Lopez, the first Hispanic elected to the Virginia House of Delegates. But it was his leadership. And so tonight, people like me have to come out and say we stand in support of his leadership. He inherited a district that was strongly Democratic, but in that circumstance, he didn't have to lead. He could have sat back and just, you know, wait for things to happen. But he came forward to say, I know what right is, and I'm going to stand for right. And today, he's introduced a bill in the House, doesn't have a number yet, saying that individuals who are seeking to come to America should not be discriminated against based on their religion. We know that there are many laws, regulations regarding refugees, but there is a counterweight in the Congress now saying that people should be discriminated against, Syrian refugees, if they're Muslim, from the presidential campaign trail. Donald Trump has said that he would ban Muslims until they could be cleared to be sure that they're not terrorists. Now, this is not something done with any other religious group. Don Beyer, in his forward thinkingness, has brought together members of Congress to say, although we can't get a constitutional amendment, we can make it the law of the land in the United States of America. Just as the Asian Exclusion Act was struck down, which before that was the Chinese Exclusion Act, any individuals from China, that no longer stand. He's saying in the same way, people should not have a religious litmus test to be entered into America as refugees. Tremendous.
That's wonderful. It seems like at a time now where everybody is just so afraid and acting on that fear or listening to people because of that fear, that somebody can stand up and say, you don't have to be afraid. You don't have to be afraid to call Muslims our friends and not to forget that, you know, they're American as well.
You know, I'm with you, but while we're saying this, it's only a select few of individuals in Congress who are free to say what they really believe. Don Beyer is a former ambassador to Switzerland. He's independent politically, doesn't need other people's money, and his conscience is in the right place. It is incumbent upon people of goodwill, people of consciousness, people of righteous faith to then stand by and ask other elected officials to say, where do you stand on this issue? Not emotionally. This is a bill that will come to the floor of the House of Representatives. Where do you stand in the upcoming election? Not at the level of the president. Those people who are on the down ballot effect. People who are running for Congress, who are running for the Senate, who are running for the governor's offices in various parts of the country. Where do you stand on this issue of discriminating against people based on their faith or no faith? Because the reality is, if you can discriminate against one, then you can discriminate against the other.
This isn't the first time that America has done this, and I've actually been trying to do some research to find out more so I can personally educate myself. But we've seen this again back in like the back in the 60s when Kennedy was running for office. We saw this with people talking about the Catholics and their place within the United States as well. But like, as I haven't been able to find if we're on the same level or if this is like a more exaggerated when back then or version of what happened back then or what.
Well, the good news is that I was only 4 years old during the Kennedy campaign. But what I did learn and what I do think is important for us, quite often people's knowledge of history seems to become fogged. And so we kind of forget the influences that have affected the American body politic. Let us take a look and say, on a deeper level, the discrimination against Catholics, the idea that Kennedy should not be elected because he's Catholic, was really a play against a new force that would come into the electoral base in America, and that was the women's vote. And so although the discussion was that Kennedy, because he's Catholic, would be bound to the Vatican, what they were really trying to say is that this tremendously popular young senator from Connecticut, from Massachusetts, that his wings could be clipped by saying, well, really, he's not that progressive. He's really not pro-women, even though he's young and handsome. He's not pro-women because we were right at the place where the women's movement was moving toward the sexual revolution, if you can remember those terms, which meant abortion would become legal soon and oral contraception would become safe and effective. They knew that this growing women's movement would vote for Kennedy. And the only way to turn it back would be to say that really he's going to be against women's reproductive rights. His Catholicism was the sort of code word for that. The election of 1960 was the first election in which women voted statistically differently from their husbands and their fathers. And they voted for Kennedy in spite of this fear-mongering that they put forward. So that's, you know, and I want to probably add another one, which I think if we ask the question, what is going on today? I mean, we can look back at the election of Kennedy and the fear-mongering, hate-mongering that was being done against Catholics. But There's I think there's another part of this that we're missing. I remember, I'm old enough to remember the civil rights movement when Kennedy was an advocate and was assassinated. And African Americans felt a tremendous loss in the hope of bringing in a new era of civil rights, civil liberties, equality, opportunity for blacks. But then when Dr. King was assassinated, it was really a symbolic assassination of African Americans' hopes and dreams. I believe today the issue of working class, middle class white Americans, they feel that sense of loss and abandonment the way blacks felt their loss of opportunity. And let's look at it. Right now they're telling us that middle class people, majority of them are white, will not do as well. There's a widening gap between the rich and the working class.
Right.
The vanishing middle class.
Right.
Their children are projected not to do as well as they did. Their houses are underwater, which most Americans, their retirement wealth is in their home.
Yeah.
Their homes, 65% of them are underwater. Their jobs are moving to Mexico or to China. Robots are replacing them in the factories, the destruction of the labor movement. And so these people are saying, we might be sensitive to the Republican Party that looks like it's working out for the looking out for the white middle class. But when they see that they're getting pushed further away from the middle class, lower taxes, less regulation doesn't mean a thing to them. They want to know who is going to say something about our loss of greatness. When Donald Trump says to make America great again, he's not talking about the 1%. The Occupy movement was raising the issue, but they were the ones who would, they were holding on to the upper middle class by a thread.
Right.
But the people at the bottom of that iceberg are the ones who are saying, Donald Trump is the only one saying what we're thinking. And that feeling, it's irrational. It's not legislation. It's irrational. But I remember after King was assassinated, you had slogans like burn, baby, burn, where African Americans said, if they don't come around, we'll burn it down. That's not a policy. That is a feeling, an emotion. And that's what is happening now. And the real question is for those of us who are better off, they say 10% of the doctors in America are Muslim. Well, what are those doctors doing for poor and working class white people? Because while we're bragging about the success of those new immigrants, the people who came as Polish and Irish and Italians and others are saying, all he's doing is taking our job and the opportunity from our child. And you're bragging about how educated American Muslims are. What are you doing, educated Muslims, to help poor and working class white people whose jobs are being shipped to Mexico and China? That's the real question. And it's not enough for us to just say, oh, they're Islamophobic. They don't like Muslims. No, their issue is, what about us? When will America come back for working class and middle class families? Trump is on one end of the spectrum and Bernie Sanders is on the other. Bernie is talking to the occupiers and Trump is talking to the people who are the bottom of the iceberg, who are living in a trailer camp, who they own a small business, but Wall Street's not going to give them a loan. The banks are hoarding the money rather than infusing it back into small businesses in America. This is the issue that I think is critical for us to bring healing to America.
There is a lot of work that lies ahead of us as a society.
Indeed.
We know
we got to talk about it first.
We do. I know the event is supposed to start in about 5 minutes, so I want to thank you for your time. And we want to make sure that we get you up there.
I appreciate that.
And thank you for talking with us. And again.
And that's why I'm here tonight, because people like Don Beyer are the kinds of people who will stand up for working families in America, independent of their race or their religion, their national origin, to do what's right, to make America better.
Inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
It's a Water Relief podcast.
My name is Carl, and here with me...
or,
or Mortimon. One of those two is correct.
I have messed this up yet again.
Yeah, I didn't know where you were going with all of that as well.
What are we doing?
Let's do it badly and then we can do it better.
Oh, excellent. That's the way I like to do it.
Dun, dun, dun. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert.
Can we try that again? 1, 2, 3, together for a better world. More stories, less yap.
What?
Yup.
That was just, it was so real.